Welcome to UMES 30. I'm Brian Daniels. UMES 30 is a half-hour talk show featuring conversations with guests from the University of Maryland Eastern Shore, the local community, and from around the nation. We cover a wide variety of topics that are of interest to you. Veterans Day is just around the corner, and you've probably already seen commercial advertisements by local and national retailers hoping to cash in on the holiday. Veterans Day is a U.S. federal holiday observed annually on November 11th for honoring military veterans who have served in the United States Armed Forces. Vets have made sacrifices for this nation, both on and off the battlefield. Many of them are still struggling to adapt to civilian life, dealing with physical and mental health issues, as well as financial challenges. The University of Maryland Eastern Shore has accepted the mission of reaching out to veterans on the educational front and acknowledging the men and women who have answered the call to service. On this edition of UMES 30, we speak with two people who have answered that call, Dr. Robert Mock, Chief of Staff for the Office of the President here at the University of Maryland Eastern Shore, and Dr. James Brissett, the Associate Dean for Development and External Relations at the UMES School of Pharmacy and Health Professions, where he also holds the rank of Associate Professor. First of all, I want to thank both you gentlemen for taking the time out to come and speak with us here on UMES 30 about veterans issues. And let me start with you, Dr. Mock. What branch of the military were you in, and how long had you served?
So I was in the Army National Guard, and I served for 8 years from 2002 to 2010. I was a hospital administrator. I was trained as a hospital administrator and did a lot of work in places like Texas and Florida, and didn't get a chance to go outside the continental United States, but I served inside of our country during the time right after 9/11, which is why I joined.
Oh, okay.
Which is why I joined.
Yeah, and how about you, Dr. Brissett?
I started out in the United States Air Force. The Air Force wanted 9 kids. They gave me a scholarship to be a STEM major. And I said, okay, I'll be a chemistry major and make sure I could graduate in 4 years. I went to the Citadel in Charleston, South Carolina. It was all-male military college at the time. And I figured there'd be a lot less distractions and a lot more focus on studying. So I stayed in the Air Force for 11 years in nuclear weapons.
So getting back to you, Dr. Mock, you mentioned that one of the main reasons you joined the military was 9/11.
Yes.
Okay, so what was the process for you mentally in terms of joining the military?
So a couple of things. So my great uncle, Robert Young, who my father's named after, and then I'm named after him, actually stormed the beaches of Normandy. And then my uncle, J.C. Mock, served in Vietnam. And I had several other uncles, Richard Riddle, who served in Korea, and one of them, Jerry Donald, also served in Korea. So we had a tradition of military service in our family. And I saw 9/11 as our generation's Pearl Harbor. And I, although I was 37 years old at the time, had already earned my doctor's degree, and was working as associate dean in the academic college at the University of Arkansas, Little Rock, I feel compelled that I must do something. So joined the military, went through basic training at Fort Sam Houston, San Antonio, Texas. I always thought that, I know I have my first degree is in engineering. I ultimately got a doctorate in higher education administration and a master's in communications. But there was a thought, as a part of me, who always thought I probably should have been a medical doctor. And so here's my chance to find an alternative path to check off that box. I was trained as a hospital administrator and served 8 years honorably. And so I'm very, very proud of that time.
And what about you, Dr. Brissett? What spurred you on to join the military as well?
Well, one of them I said was certainly financial.
Sure.
It was a great way to pay for college. But my father and stepfather were both in the Air Force. Actually, they started out in the Army Air Corps, which became the Army Air Force, which became the Air Force. My grandfather had been a Marine, ran away at 16 or 17 to join the Marines and go to World War I. And so I think it was in the family, but I also knew I wanted to serve serve the nation in a way that I thought was bigger than, you know, I do on my own. And certainly the experiences, as Dr. Mock here mentioned, I mean, the military prepares you for a lot of things that you didn't know you were prepared to do. But they do prepare you. I said I was in nuclear weapons. I was trained as intercontinental ballistic missile deputy crew commander, and so we would be underground. I was in the underground Air Force.
You're locked away in the silos.
Exactly right. And you know, you pull 24-hour alert in that launch control center, and it's, you know, usually lots of boredom perpetuated by brief periods of high panic and chaos. But with that said, I learned all about attention to detail, being able to manage multiple things at once, because on that missile silo, you had all kinds of things that were going on. It was really an industrial complex that you had to manage and keep things operating. Mm-hmm. At the same time, also decode and respond to message traffic. Yeah, one of the amount of attention to detail with nuclear weapons, people say, well, how'd you go from nuclear weapons and intelligence to pharmacy? Because I left the Air Force in 92 during the peace dividend. The Soviet Union had gone away, our major adversary in the Eastern Bloc. And I said, well, you know, in pharmacy and nuclear weapons, very small mistakes can have grave consequences. And so actually one was really preparation for the other. And the confidence building that comes with in the military, you're handed so much responsibility at such a young age. I was 22. I was barely older than the missile that I was babysitting at 22, and I had enlisted guys on my crew that weren't as old as the missile. So it's a good training ground. It was a good training ground for me, and I know for others.
Now, Dr. Frazetta has kind of answered my next question. So to you, Dr. Mock, can you give me kind of a broad overview of what your experience in the military was like for you?
So as a hospital administrator, one of the things that I was in charge of as the XO, I reported to a colonel. And so we had all of the doctors, the nurses, the dentists, the physician assistants, all the technicians associated with any sort of medical operation. We did all of the preparation for mobilization and demobilization. Mm-hmm. So every soldier had to go through each one of the medical stations to make sure that they were fit for duty so that they could go into the theater of combat.
Okay.
And then we're on the other end, we received them on the return visit. And so one of the things that that was very profound to me is that not only would people have to be physically prepared, but they had to be emotionally, psychologically prepared, and then to see if they were also prepared to return to society.
Okay.
And so that's what was really a stark reality for me, to notice how many of our soldiers were suffering from PTSD and traumatic brain injury. So much so that I did some research and presented several papers at national conferences several years ago along those lines. And so that even though the war is over for some of those individuals who came back out of the theater of battle, the war still existed inside of their psychological being. And so it became very important to me to try to figure out what can I do to help make their lives a little bit better, because I understand that you can't unlearn some of the stuff you have experienced when you have been in the theater of battle.
Right.
And so that's what it was like for me. So it was kind of heartbreaking in many instances to see a person leave very fit, very confident, very capable, as Dr. Brissett was talking about. And after their tour, when they come back and it's now time to go through those same batteries of physical and psychological exams to see that they are not the same person, even if they're physically the same. They're not emotionally or psychologically the same. And not in every single case, not in every single situation. Some people come back and they're totally prepared and capable and move right back into society like they never left. But some do suffer from some of those things I just mentioned before, PTSD and traumatic brain injury.
You mentioned PTSD and, you know, traumatic brain injury. So when people leave the employ of the U.S. military, I know that a lot of people are still struggling and dealing with those issues. So what kind of resources are available for people who are still struggling through those issues?
So the first one is the Veteran Association, right? The VA. Now, very transparent, you know, we've gotten some non-positive press about our ability in the VA to manage some of the cases associated with our soldiers.
Okay.
And so that is the main number one spot that they can go to. And that is termed that the VA administration, Veteran Administration, can help provide you the medical, psychological, the dental care that you would need. Now, because the numbers are bigger than their ability for the VA to handle, they often partner with other organizations external outside of the VA. So local hospitals and veteran associations and veteran support groups oftentimes can work as a transition location to provide guidance to help those individuals get those services.
Okay.
And so it's not just the VA only, but that's what the VA's main purpose is. And also it's difficult. Sometimes you may not be in a location where a VA hospital is located. And so that's when the VA begins to say, okay, we're going to partner with this organization, with this hospital, this local regional facility, PRMC, for example,
right.
I use as an example, that they could provide services and then your veterans benefits could be received and operated through that location. And ultimately, you particularly should not receive any charges associated with that.
Right.
Based on your orders when you were departed, when you were discharged from the military. Some people have a disability.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the disability comes in a number, right? 100% disabled versus 80 or 70 or 60. And all those numbers have an impact on, one, do you receive a stipend from the military?
Mm-hmm.
And two, are there medical benefits that go with your discharge from the military? So that's how those services are provided. But we have a lot of great facilities in some locations. I went through my basic training at Fort Sam Houston, San Antonio, Texas, which we call BAMC down there, which is a location. It's a Army Medical Center, big, large one there. You know, when you're located in a place like that, it's a little easier to receive those services. But you're in a rural area, sometimes it's more difficult.
And sure.
That's what they try to do.
Okay. And just to piggyback on what you said about, like you mentioned, PRMC,
yes.
Peninsula Regional Medical Center, coming up on Veterans Day on Monday the 11th, they're actually giving free flu shots to veterans and their families. So just to let our audience know what's going on with that.
Well, that was a great tie-in, Brian, because I got to tell you,
okay.
Somebody had posted on the Facebook page for veterans.
Mm-hmm.
It's a place where a lot of veterans get together and said they're out of flu shots at Walter Reed. So I guess I know where I'll be on the 11th.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
On Monday,
yeah.
11 November, I'll be knocking on PRMC's door and putting my arm out.
Yeah, and they have a special van or unit that they're going to have parked, I think, across from PRMC where you can go and get your flu shot starting at 9 a.m. So there you go.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Wonderful.
And what Dr. Mock was talking about is your percent disability. I am 100% disabled veteran, and we always don't walk around. I mean, it's not always apparent what your disability might be. And a lot of times it's a collection of things.
Sure.
And the VA, the Veterans Administration, rates that. And I think one of the messages I'd like to get out to the veterans, and it may be running ahead a little bit of your question. In the beginning, I thought I don't need to put in for a disability because,
right.
You know, I've got all my arms and limbs. And if you're at Walter Reed and you see the condition of some of your buddies, the men and women that do come back, and now they're younger, and Robert and I aren't as young as we used to be, but when you see these young folks, and then you think, but I had other veteran tell me, it's not about you, Jim, you got to put in for it, and I'll help you. He just happened to be a physician and an attorney,
mm-hmm.
and a reservist lieutenant colonel. He said, think about your family. It's for them. It's for their benefit.
Sure.
That's right.
And I think a lot of veterans need to hear, it's not about you. Think about your family. And it's something
right.
the government will provide you. It's a hard process to get through, though.
And see, now we have less than 1% of the American population that have ever served in the military. So that is very different than, as I mentioned early on in this interview, about my uncles who mm-hmm. were at a period of time in life where we were having the draft.
Okay.
And now, you know, thank God we don't have the draft. We don't have war so much that is necessary that we have selective service. But the number of people that are serving is so low compared to what it once was. And so I think that exposure has not necessarily helped us because we don't have as much in many numbers. It's not so obvious where we are in everyday society as opposed to 30 or 40 years ago.
That's a good point.
And so it made a big, big difference because 30 or 40 years ago, almost every single family had somebody who they knew was either serving currently
right.
or recently was serving or just returned.
Mm.
And now it's rare. It's very, very rare.
So do either of you think that veterans who are either now serving or even out of the military, do you think that some of them don't take advantage of the services because they feel that, well, you mentioned, of course, they might not feel that they have a problem, or in some cases, do you feel that perhaps there might be a sense of shame that they have a problem, they're just trying to, you know, kind of suck it up? What do you think about that?
I'll take a stab at that one.
Okay.
I know for me personally, I just felt like I knew it was a benefit, mm-hmm. but I didn't feel like the military, as Dr. Mock could tell you, and a lot of people understand, is you always think about how do you accomplish the mission first? What is the mission of your unit? And it's the person to the left and the person to the right and the person behind you and the person ahead of you. Your allegiance is to them and to accomplish something together. You're not used to thinking about yourself. And, you know, you don't think about self-care because you think about care of the unit and care of the other guy or the other gal in moving the mission forward. And so I had to basically I needed another vet, a veteran. I told you about the doctor, physician, attorney guy that talked to me. And it took about 2 years for mm-hmm. him to wear me down, because it wasn't that I wasn't listening. It's an education process. And I think veterans need to understand that their contract with the United States government was to protect this nation against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That does come at a cost, and we have to recognize it. And we do try to tend to suck it up when you're in the military. Mm-hmm. I'm not hurt, or I'm not going to let down my fellow soldiers, airmen, Marines, or sailors. So I think it's a lot of that. And then there could be some shame. I mean, I know when I was in nuclear weapons, the last thing we ever want to do is say we ever had a mental issue, because mm-hmm. that would take us down. I mean, while you technically could do that, say you were going through a divorce or something like that, you also thought that would negatively impact your career. So you get used to trying to say, well, I need to stay fit and I need to be serving the mission.
One of the seven Army values is selfless service. Mm-hmm. That's one of the values. And so that is drilled into you. And so sometimes when you think, okay, if I do this, this is for myself. Mm. And maybe that's not selfless service, right? And I've been told that that's not the way we do things. Our values is one of the things to have selfless service. And so I think that sometimes that people think, well, you know, I already served. I was paid a salary. Mm. So I'm done. It's an even exchange. I provided this service. I got money and I got the time, and I'm walking away now. But I think the reality of it is that sometimes that the price is eternal. And I think that, you know, when people have those injuries, whether they're psychological, emotional, or physical, they don't go away. And so, you know, I think we owe some of those airmen, those sailors, those Coast Guard, those Marines, those Army individuals, something for the ultimate price that they have paid.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to UMES 30. I'm Brian Daniels, and we're speaking with Dr. Robert Mock, who happens to be the Chief of Staff here at the University of Maryland Eastern Shore for the President's Office, and Dr. James Brissett, retired captain from the Air Force, and he is an associate professor in the School of Pharmacy here at UMES. Now we're going to steer this over to how UMES is connecting with the local veterans. As you may know, Veterans Day is coming up on November 11th, and we also here on campus have a Veterans Gala type of celebration coming up on November 8th, which is Friday. If you could tell me a little bit about that, we'll start with you, Jim.
Well, that's great. I'm looking at the very talented MC to my left here, Dr. Robert Mock, who probably should tell you, first of all, I can tell you the food is going to be excellent. Our hospitality and travel management program is, you know, always makes a big impression on the local community. But this event, the Veterans Gala, is probably the crown jewel of the fall season. And Chef Whittingham has actually been served in two services, the Army and the Navy. So, you know, there's that connection. But mm-hmm. It is Major General Anthony Sarbanes will be coming in as one of the guests of honor.
Correct.
And the Secretary of the Maryland Department of Veterans Affairs, George Owens.
Yes.
Will be here. And the MC will be none other than the talented, the ever effervescent Dr. Robert Mock.
It's going to be an exciting time. We're looking forward to it. We're really trying to raise the veteran profile here on our campus, mm-hmm. particularly with the student population, you know. And at one time, UMES used to have a ROTC program.
Right.
And so we're going to try to revive that program. We're working with Dr. Douglas DeWitt, who's at Salisbury University, and Walter Woods. Those two have been communicating. We used to have a memorandum of understanding mm-hmm. between the two institutions where students could participate participate in ROTC here at UMES and take some of those courses at Salisbury University. And so we want to revive that. And so ultimately, maybe one day, we can have our own location, just ROTC right here on campus. But we want to start as soon as we can and start that process back up and going. So we're really trying to expose the veterans that on campus to more opportunities and get more exposure to our ultimate culture here on our campus. And so we're excited about it. We celebrated 9/11 together. And Dr. Bissette was there as I was as well. And so we're really trying to raise the profile for our veterans here on campus.
And it's worth saying that some of the students prevailed upon me to become the chapter advisor for an organization that's forming, a student organization called the Hawk Vets.
Mm-hmm.
Hawk being our mascot.
Sure.
And Sarah Evans and Stephanie Hollowell were the two that prevailed upon me, and they had me at the word veteran.
That's right.
And so they didn't have to do very much of a hard sell, but it's really the student veterans organization, Hawk Vets, is open to not just veteran students, but anybody that thinks that they're in a profession that might lead them to be in contact with veterans. They can be a dependent of a veteran, a spouse, a faculty member, anybody that really wants to be part of supporting veterans on campus and being more aware of veterans' issues. We welcome their participation in Hawk Vets, and we are dangerously close to getting enough people that we will meet the requirements to become a student organization. So I'll get that plug in if you need. If you're interested, please email me, James Bressette, JLBRESETTE at umes.edu.
You mentioned that, Dr. Mock, about trying to get the ROTC program at UMES going again. Are there any other things that UMES is doing to attract more veterans here on campus?
So we have a person in the registrar's office of admissions who only handles veterans when they register. And so we try to do that to provide them the services that they need. The only thing that's difficult sometimes is they don't always self-identify. Back to that selfless service thing, right? They don't raise their hand and say, hey, I'm a vet, you know what I mean? And so sometimes it's hard to assist. And so that's one of the, we also want to create at least a veterans lounge, right? Not that non-vets cannot go in there. We want to open it to everybody. But hopefully we can decorate it with some veteran, at least a seal from each one of the different branches of the military. And we want to be able to create one of that type of space for them, for a place for them to go in and just to be able to hang out and study. Because a lot of our vets sometimes are non-traditional students in terms of age. Mm-hmm. Right? A lot of them are not 18 right out of high school, right? Some of them returned from being in the military, and now they want to come back and complete their degrees. And so that's one of the things that we want to be able to do as well. And so provide them spaces where they can be able to engage and relate to other individuals who may have had similar experiences. And so trying to do that, and hopefully we can bring ROTC back. And then we have a veterans committee now that has people from the community. I have to mention Stephanie Holloway. So she's very, very motivated and is constantly trying to help vets get more opportunities on our campus and in the community. And so she, Walter Woods, myself, Dr. Bissette, and there's a lot of other individuals, Crystal that works in our office, Crystal Sankar that works in our office, out of the office of the, not office of president, she works out of the office of legal counsel, but very motivated to try to help expose our veterans to more opportunities on our campus. So that committee meets regularly, and this gala is one of the things that came as a result of it. And we did 9/11, as I mentioned before, and so we're just trying to get more engagement, and that's one of the registered student organizations that Dr. Bissette mentioned before. So we're trying to do that to give more exposure to them.
My son enlisted, rather than, he could have come here to UMES, but he enlisted, and now he's going to come out with a GI Bill. Well, a lot of our students can't afford to stay in college, and that disrupts their educational experience. But with the GI Bill, we can be that place, that community, that small school. We're still a public school with a great small school feel, and we can really help take care of folks and make sure they get guided through their educational process. And by providing a veteran-friendly campus and where veterans are not only understood, but towards what Dr. Mock was saying, that we've made accommodations and we're actually welcoming veterans. I think it goes back to a lot of what he had said about, you know, maybe we owe them something, and maybe we can make that deliver a little bit on that commitment, our piece here at UMES. And that would be the major piece that I think most of us would draw back to. It's our mission, and let's connect these folks.
Sure.
It's a win-win. UMES benefits, and so do the veterans benefit. It's a situation where we get a chance to help those veterans come to campus and ultimately earn a degree and to return to tax-paying citizens in a different with a different level of education. And then those individuals get a chance to earn an education that can increase their livelihood and their financial status, and there's other benefits from getting a college degree too. Of course, you live longer, you have a higher quality of life, you know, you're more likely to serve your community. All those things come with getting a college degree. So I think it's a win-win from UMES as well as the veteran.
Do either of you have anything that you wish to address directly to the veterans out there?
I will just say to all veterans out there, please go and access your benefits. And if you're not certain what they are, then go pursue an organization that will help you identify what your benefits are. And remember, even though there's organizations out there that's willing to help, they all don't have the same level of information. So if you don't get the answer you're looking for in one area, go to another source and try to continue to search out what benefits are you eligible for, because there are people willing to help, good intended people who may not have the answer that you're looking for. So continue to go out and do that research, because we care about you.
And I would say, you know, the American Legion, the VFW, some of the veteran service organizations that have veteran service officers. They're not professionals, but they, you know, a lot of these folks in retirement, they make sure that they're pretty up on how to pursue your benefits. And so it's at least, as Dr. Mock was saying, a good place to get a start. Of course, the VA and the toll-free number. If you have problems, that's what we got two senators and a congressman for. And then, you know, UMES, let us be a safety net to you as well.
Okay. And is there anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, Brian, there is. I'm fortunate to have three children out of the four that have served in the military. One's already a veteran, and two are active duty. And the Army messed up and allowed them all to come home at the same time. They got home Tuesday night. My daughter, who's an artillery officer, my son-in-law, who's an artillery officer on the DMZ in Korea. And then my son, Eric, who enlisted, he is PCS and back, moving back to the States. The Army's transferring him to El Paso, Fort Bliss, and he gets to stop at home on the way there. So every once in a while, the military does something smart, even though they don't know it. So we appreciate the United States Army.
Okay. Well, thank you for that, Dr. Brissett. I've been speaking with Dr. Robert Mock, Chief of Staff for the Office of the President here at the University of Maryland Eastern Shore, and Dr. James Brissett, the Associate Dean for Development and External Relations at the UMES School of Pharmacy and Health Professions, where he also holds the rank of Associate Professor. Both are U.S. military veterans. Gentlemen, both of you, thank you so much for dropping by and talking with us about veterans, and of course, thank you both for your service.
Thank you. We enjoyed it.
You've been listening to UMES 30. I'm Brian Daniels. Listen to this or any past episode of UMES 30 by logging on to WESM913.org or through the NPR One app available for download on Google Play. UMES 30 is produced in the studios of 91.3 WESM, located on the campus of the University of Maryland Eastern Shore. The views and opinions expressed on UMES 30 are not necessarily those of 91.3 WESM or the University of Maryland Eastern Shore.